Hello, you damn stinking apes.
Wow, rude.
Right?
I'm not calling my listeners that.
So here's what was wild to me is last week we landed on this planet and we weren't sure what it was. Turned out to be Earth. This week, we're on that same planet, but we're beneath the Planet of the Apes. Today, we're talking about Beneath the Planet of the Apes, a movie Jordan and I had not seen before, a sequel to Planet of the Apes. And if you heard our Trainspotting episode with Case Aiken, a huge self-proclaimed ape head, I asked him, hey, what can we expect? Because we haven't seen any of the others, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, this one is the worst. And so, you know, it brought me down. Mm-hmm. Brought me like, okay, don't be expecting too much. But I gotta say, I know that this movie is not well revered.
But it is interesting.
It's very interesting.
You have to give it that. If you have humans living under Earth ripping their faces off. to reveal a gross, veiny, weird human underneath.
And
you're wondering, they all know each other. They all live down here. Why are they needing to wear faces? Why can't they just exist as they are? That question.
Do I have
many
the
more in this movie that don't go answered?
And you're neglecting something else. They worship a bomb in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this movie kind of slaps, I will say.
Very interesting.
Has one of the wilder endings I've ever seen in a movie.
Yep.
In a blockbuster movie.
Yep.
And
movie two, they do this.
I just kind of love that this movie starts and it's like, hey, we're ripping off the first movie. And you're like, oh, cool. This is just Planet of the Apes, but bad.
You even casted someone that looks like Charlton.
And then when it swerves, baby, it swerves so hard that I'm like, am I going to love every entry in this series? Because I'm on board.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board. And I will say I liked this movie quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I would rewatch this movie.
A movie that's like an hour and a half. How can you hate it?
Well, we didn't finish Renfield.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess it's possible.
Yeah, it is. But hey, here's the other thing about this movie that I think I maybe thought was dumb at one point, but I think rocks. Is this begins the, like, sequel naming, where they say something of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Or I think there's one that's from or something like that.
From the Planet of the Apes or...
Yeah, something like that. There's one where one of the articles is different, the middle article,
okay.
But it's kind of this weird, like, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And I think when those new movies were coming out, I was like, oh, brother, you know, CGI and of the's and stuff. But now I'm like, that is so kind of awesome that it's always going to be word of the Planet
of the
Apes.
But in a way, kind of makes it impossible to remember them.
Yeah. But I have
that. I'll probably be wrong because I'm watching them, so I'll probably remember.
Yeah. I found it to be really easy when we cover series, except for the series that I still have trouble figuring out. Is the Dirty Harry series.
Oh, me too. I already don't remember. I barely remember Star Wars.
Yeah. And now that we mention it, the Dollars trilogy, I can never remember which one's first.
Man with No Name?
Yeah.
That's the first one.
That is not a name of any of them.
Oh, he's just the Man with No Name.
There's a Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More is two, and then...
Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So we got that. The Dirty Harry, Magnum Force.
P.I.? Or just Magnum Force. He's not a P.I.
The Enforcer, Sudden Impact, The Deadpool.
Good for you.
Yeah. I can do every series we've covered. So here we go. Marvel. No, I'm kidding. Actually, Marvel, I couldn't do in order. But that's because it's like series within series.
Yeah. Let's go past this.
Yeah. So do you want to say anything before I get into who made it?
No, it's all in the vault. Not to be opened until we're through production.
Until we go beneath production.
Yes.
Okay, so this movie's directed by Ted Post. Hey, we talked about him because...
Speaking of...
Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
He made a movie called Hang 'Em High. Then he made Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And then he made Magnum Force.
Hang 'Em High, is that a Western?
It's a Western starring Clint Eastwood.
It's a pretty cool title.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah, very good. But yeah, and then after this movie, he makes Magnum Force.
Oh, after this?
Yeah. So he's...
Oh, he makes the second one.
Huh?
Magnum Force?
Yes.
And that's the one with that's the one where the guy's like shooting people, or is that the first one?
The Zodiac guy. Killer is the first movie.
First one.
The second movie is where you have like the group of cops.
Oh, right.
Which was a good one.
Yeah, as good as the first one.
Not as good, but kind of a fun. The more I reflect on that series,
very interesting though. Yeah.
The more I reflect, the more I could find myself like rewatching those.
Yeah,
because
in that one, they're kind of like, we're kind of living off of your philosophy, Dirty Harry.
Yeah, which
won't
was
you join
very
us?
Cool.
And he's like, not even you, man.
Yeah,
not even you.
The really the only dud is the enforcer, the one where it's like he gets a girl partner.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that one's kind of dumb.
That's why they killed her.
Yeah, the story is by Paul Den and Mort Abrahams, and Mort Abrahams is a producer, and then Paul Den writes the screenplay. He also wrote the screenplay for Goldfinger, and Murder on the Orient Express, amongst others.
Okay.
Murder on the Orient Express being the Sidney Lumet movie.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography is by Milton R. Krasner, who did the cinematography on All About Eve, a movie I still have never seen, hear mm-hmm. about all the time, need to watch it. And, of course, The 7-Year Itch, a movie we need to watch this year because we're on our 7th year of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
People who know what that movie's about are
Who's
like,
the guy
why
in
are
movie?
You watching that? And 7-Year Itch, I don't recall.
Okay.
The music is by Leonard Rosenman, and he has done some pretty cool stuff. So he's done Star Trek IV, Rebel Without a Cause, Barry Lyndon,
okay,
and the animated Lord of the Rings movies.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I thought the score in this was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I like the telepathic stuff. I'm
like the noises
like,
that they use?
Yeah, I'm kind of like all about this movie a little bit. It certainly pales in comparison to one.
Yeah, no, yeah. But it is fascinating.
Yeah, I thought...
It is truly like... I do think it almost like, before franchises really thing, they're kind of flipping it on its head in this movie.
Yeah.
Because of what you said, this movie starts with, it's kind of the first movie to start
right, and you're like,
okay, I'm in for it. I just got to make it through this and just see all the same hits, like the points they have to hit. And then about halfway through, maybe even more than halfway through, where really doesn't feel like there's much movie left. They just dump all this crap on you, and it is like getting whiplash.
Yeah, it's like if you were just listening to this series with us and watching along, and maybe you never have partaken of the series, I'd say do it. Watch this movie and before finishing this episode, because at the very least, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we interrupt this program to tell you we got the baby back in the studio. We started without her in the studio, and then she took a 25-minute nap
mm-hmm.
instead of an hour and a half, and here we are.
Sleep aggression is fun.
Hey, Talia, say hello to the audience at home. She did breathe loudly, which probably wasn't picked up by the mics. Okay, so this movie comes out May 26, 1970. It has a $3 million budget as opposed to $5.8.
Why is it so much less?
Oh, there's a reason, my friend. And then domestically, which is both of these movies basically only got released in the U.S. So this one does 17, where the first movie did 33.
Okay.
But I think it's still a hit.
Okay.
Relatively so.
Uh-huh.
This, I didn't find a citation for, so I don't know how real this is. But they approached Rod Serling, to work on the script. But he couldn't get it turned around fast enough.
Okay.
So then they were like, no. So they went to Pierre Boyer.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in the citation parts. We got this confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Wink, wink. Well, no, it is. Pierre Boyer, who wrote the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a draft called Planet of the Men, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
And... in this, so this actually makes kind of more sense for an idea. I feel like I get this. Taylor would lead a revolution of men to fight back.
Yeah.
But the producers wanted the shock and surprise of the original.
Darn producers.
Well, thank you, producers. So Mort Abrahams, one of the producers, started writing some ideas. And then, is it Paul Den? Paul Den is... hired. There she goes, saying hello. Den wanted to tap into the fear of nuclear warfare,
mm-hmm.
Which is cool. And then one of the elements...
It's interesting that at the end of the first movie, he says this, and then they do say, obviously, this is what happened. But, like, we released... Humans killed ourselves because of nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they make that so clear.
Yeah. Did they make that clear in the first movie?
Well, at the end of the first movie, when he's looking at the Statue of Liberty, he's like, we did it. We bombed ourselves.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. We did it. We bombed ourselves. Ah!
Mm-hmm. Exactly like that.
Okay. So, all right. So one of the elements that Abrahams and Den thought up was that there would be a half-human, half-ape child. And they did some makeup tests and stuff.
On a baby? On a child.
On a child. And they did some makeup tests, and then they dropped it because there was like, wait, there's a bestiality implication here.
Oh, yeah.
So they said, let's not deal with that. Heston agreed to be in this movie as long as he got killed.
Okay.
And that he would give his pay over to charity.
I did see that.
And then Schaffner, the director of the first movie, couldn't return because he was working on Patton, in which he would win best director. So good choice for you there as far as your flowers go. Ted Post was not like a fan of where this movie story-wise was headed.
Oh, okay.
He said it's not making a point at all. The loss of a planet is the loss of all hope. And that ending is still in the movie, so...
Interesting.
I wonder how he kind of dealt with that artistically. Post attempted to get Wilson, who's the scriptwriter from the first movie.
The volleyball.
The volleyball. But the budget couldn't afford it.
Okay.
So Post and Franciscus, the lead actor. Franciscus?
Franciscus?
Franciscus, probably. They spent a lot of time writing and clarifying and providing more depth to Brent.
Okay.
Roddy McDowell, who was the Zira's husband in the first movie, he was tied up directing a movie, and so he couldn't return.
But I saw this is the only one he's not in of these.
Okay,
OGs.
Cool. It was funny because in this movie, I was like, he seems different, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And he didn't seem like, I didn't feel like he was as charismatic or good in this movie.
But I also felt like that is not so much the acting, it was the character just felt more heightened.
But now I feel like it's the acting.
It probably is.
You know?
Yeah. Because in the last movie, very much too, he was like, Zira, stop talking, don't say anything, we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's like even more that.
Yeah.
But it's tensions are rising.
Yeah. So.
In their culture.
Orson Welles turned down the role of General Ussus, which makes sense. I don't think he wanted to be in all that makeup. And then Fox. So here is why the movie has such a low budget compared to the first one. Fox had some recent bombs, although this says citation needed, but it had some recent bombs, Hello Dolly and Tora Tora Tora. So they cut this budget in half.
Yikes.
So there we go. Heston was filmed in 8 days.
Okay.
And then, let's see. This I wanted to point out because I thought that this was kind of brilliant. So in this movie, we have the mutant humans, and they sing like a hymn. And there was something strange about it. And it just made me think, like, man, the composer, whoever did this, this was really, really smart. Because it felt like... they actually tapped into like, oh, music has evolved in some way. And it doesn't sound totally like how a hymn would sound now or even in like the past, but it's still hymn feeling. So there's this thing. A short sequence of diegetic music features in the scene set in the ruins of St. Patrick's Cathedral in which, okay, yeah. For this scene, Rosenman composed a discordant setting of Cecil Francis Alexander's 1848 Christian hymn, All Things Bright and Beautiful, with the lyrics altered to pay homage to the Bomb Almighty. So he purposely made it discordant.
Oh, cool.
And changed the lyrics.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
And then this is the first time in a while that we've watched a movie where I've thought, these are some wild ideas. I want to know more. Not like, ugh, you know.
I went too far.
I was like, give me more of this.
How do you get here?
So I wanted to talk about the mutants.
Yeah, please.
Because I was like,
did you learn more about? Great,
I found out about it. Okay, so the mutants were descended from a long line of mutated humans whose origins dated back to the 1990s when the human-controlled governments of Earth wage war with one another.
Okay.
Survivors of the nuclear holocaust were forced to seek shelter in the ruins of cities contaminated with atomic radiation.
Got it.
So this was exposed to them, and it caused genetic defects through generations, forcing select groups of mankind to evolve into a new subspecies of mutant. 2,000 years later, many of these mutant descendants began to develop advanced telepathic abilities. Whether these mental endowments were born as a side effect of their mutation is still a matter of speculation.
Thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up.
By the late 40th century, I just love that sentence, a coalition of mutants established a settlement in the ruins of St. Patrick's Cathedral. And, so they have the Divine Bomb, and declaring the weapon as the Divine Bomb, the Alpha Omega Bomb represented not only a unifying characteristic of their lifestyle, but of their origins as well. They believe that God spoke to them through the weapon. They placed the missile as well as its accompanying launch controls at the nave of their altar in the cathedral.
The control panel was super cool.
Very cool. On most occasions, the subterranean denizens of New York wore latex masks and wigs, which concealed their physical mutations. But during liturgical services and mass, it was customary to remove their masks while proclaiming in unison, "I reveal my inmost self unto my God."
So why do they wear masks?
It didn't really say why. They just do. But they take them off in liturgical services. Okay, that's freaking cool.
Into that.
Anyway, so...
Thank you for looking into that deeper.
Yeah, and I think it's a kind of a cool idea, because I'm like, oh, they're worshiping a bomb. That's just random and interesting. But I like the idea that they're like, no, this is what destroyed us. Therefore, it's what created us as mutants. Therefore, we worship it. There's actually kind of a lot there.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
Pretty fascinating. Can you just get her ball?
Yeah.
Is that all you have on notes?
That's what I got on notes. Hit me with actors.
So, in this movie, we have... James Franciscus.
Francisco.
What a teacherly IMDb profile pic.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
He is also in...
He's literally holding a pencil.
The Cat O'Nine Tales. Good Guys. Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
I'm also trying to entertain Talia right now while you do this. That's why these reactions are so over the top.
Weird movie. This would be called Secret Weapons, and look at the poster.
Oh, no. Yikes. We're not watching that one.
No. And then, yeah, so on and so forth. And then the Mendez, Paul Richards plays Mendez. He was one of the brainy dudes.
Okay, yeah.
But he is also
like the one with the glasses, like kind of the leader.
Maybe, or the other one.
Okay, there were like four or five, but yeah.
Monkey on My Back, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, Kiss Me Deadly. Fat Man, played by Victor Buono.
Yeah, I can't believe they just named this guy Fat Man. They don't even have like a crazy, you know, in retrospect billing. It's just Fat Man.
He does a crazy performance in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. That movie is so flipping cool.
Yeah.
He's also in Robin and the Seven Hoods, Four for Texas, and so on. Who's trying to find that? Do you remember the general's name?
Ursus?
The gorilla? Oh, was that what it was?
I believe so, because that's
Ursus, played by James Gregory. He is in The Manchurian Candidate.
Ah. Murderer's I'm assuming Row. The 50s one.
Yeah. Okay. 60s. Murderer's 60s, okay. Row, Barney Miller, Black Money, Mr. Belvedere, and everything else.
And everything else. Okay.
Anything else?
What about...
Albina, played by Natalie Trundy. She was the lady, brainy lady.
Okay.
She's in... Conquest of the Planet. So confusing. She's in More.
Okay.
I guess maybe she is something else.
Well, and
but then she's in another. No, she's different characters.
Okay, interesting.
Huckleberry Finn, and that's like a lot of her credits that were Planet of the Apes movies.
Okay, all right. Well, can you tell me who's the guy that they kill in the cell? He's one of the other intellect people.
Oh yeah.
He's like the one who's torturing them.
I believe it's Don Pedro Colley. He is in THX-1138, Sugar Hill, Midnight Massacre. He's in some really bad looking movies. Only bad.
Let's get into the plot.
Okay.
So we're jumping into the plot, and Talia is definitely going to be talking a little bit more on this. So for those of you who have enjoyed, oh my gosh, my zipper was down too.
What? Are you serious?
I'm serious.
So that's so cute.
We have to pull back the curtain. We just went on a walk, and when we got back, Jordan...
I XYZ'd myself.
Yeah, she defeated in the bedroom, was like, oh my gosh, my zipper was down. And I just put my hands down, and my zipper was down too. How cute is that?
I mean, only in year 7 of marriage could that happen.
Absolutely. So, this movie begins... Oh, yeah, and I was going to say, for all those that liked when Talia was in our earlier episodes, she's back, and better than ever.
She's back with a vengeance. Yeah, and babies this time, have vengeance.
This time it's personal. So, the movie begins with...
It's kind of a recap.
Yeah, footage from the first movie. And oddly enough, sometimes this sort of thing can be annoying in movies. But back then, you know, you got to remember, like, you can't necessarily just, like, rent but Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
You know, you probably can only watch it in theaters or, like, on TV. I don't even know if they were doing that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a little recap is good. It kind of did a good job of setting the mood. I kind of was like, okay, I'm into this.
Yeah.
And then... it goes to a crash-landed new ship that's crash-landed.
Did you at first think, why would they not put it... like, I still thought this was recap territory.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, so it's not in a lake anymore? Or the lake dried up by the time Charlton found it again?
Well,
And then this guy comes out, or is out, and I was like, okay, so they did the whole recap with Charlton, and then they just have this new blonde guy that's not Charlton Heston to be the same, to be Taylor. I'm confused. And then pretty quickly they tell you his name.
Yeah, so I did briefly think they just cast a guy that looks like a young Charlton Heston.
Which I think I did read something about, like, about him being casted partly for that reason.
Weird.
Yeah.
But the first thing I thought, actually, was I thought, the monkeys or someone have like, pulled the ship out in the land.
Oh.
And this is, like, now they've discovered their ship from the previous movie. That's what I thought. But alas, none of those things are what happened, folks. It is someone new and this older man. Yes, Brent. And this older man. And the older man is, like, about to die. And they crash landed and they were following Taylor's beacon.
Do we know how far after?
I mean,
I would like to think it'd been a good amount of time after.
But I think it'd have to be, like, the same amount of time.
What do you mean the same amount of time? Is, like, it time dilation?
Yeah, I don't, unless he, like,
why would they send
went
two
through,
people?
Like, a wormhole.
Or why would they send two crews? But think about it this way. If they are in the future of Taylor, science does progress, and maybe they were able to. But also sounds like kind of like the first movie, they didn't exactly know where they would end up.
Yeah.
Time-wise, they just knew that they were following Taylor's trajectory.
Yeah. Actually, it doesn't.
That's what I think. It doesn't make sense to send two crews at the same time.
Yeah, and it also doesn't make sense that they were there to rescue, because they would get the beacon.
Oh,
in
I
the
never
future.
Thought they were there to rescue.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think they were there to rescue?
I thought maybe, but they just said they were following them. So let's just assume that they were just like, we're sending two missions out.
I like to think of it this way. We get Taylor's crew.
No, we're thinking of it my way, and then we're going on.
They send Taylor's crew out, and then maybe 10 years or more on Earth, they're like, we haven't heard a transmission in a while.
Yeah.
Don't know where they are. Based on science, we think they could be here, but also we don't know. Because they never were able to get a transmission out.
Yeah.
So then they say, okay, let's send another crew out on the same trajectory to see if they can find them. Not to rescue, but continue exploring in the name of exploration. Or they did get a ping back on Earth from Taylor's crew. Right when they landed, and they thought 50-100 years later, let's go see what they're up to, because we now have higher technology where we can do that easier.
So here's what I'm also going to say. Wait,
no one's talked about it this much before.
No, I know. And then we should put it to rest because I think they have to have just followed them.
But he didn't seem to know him personally. It's just that he knew him.
Oh, but he recognized him right away, and he was like,
"What?
Taylor.
There aren't pictures back then?
Not in the '70s. Pictures were invented in 2005. No, there. And now I lost the thread. But there was something in what you said where I was like, "Oh, that would mean it like contradicts something else." Either way,
and
they
now they're here. That guy dies.
Yeah.
So now it's just Brent trying to figure out what to do. That's when Nova shows up on a horse.
Oh, yeah.
Well, more or less.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah.
And then he, you know, another woman or person, he, you know, he's not quite sure if they're human or not.
Uh-huh.
But he does go, va-va-voom.
Yeah.
But he's asking her questions.
He goes, obooga-obooga. His eyes turn into hearts and pop out of his head and pop back in.
And he's asking her questions. She can't respond because she can't talk.
Yeah.
Notices that she's wearing a dog chain and
it's Taylor
dog tags.
Dog tags. Yeah.
Dog tags. And it has Taylor's name on it. More questions with no answers.
Yeah.
So he just gets on the horse with her.
And so this is like, I think initially I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be kind of a rough watch because like this guy's just going to go through like the same experience slightly altered. And that's going to be the movie.
Yeah.
And my imagination on these movies is that there would be like, you know, decades between them or you'd go to like a different tribe or something. So the fact that it's like this direct sequel kind of threw me off
as
well.
It's crazy that the author of the first one of the book came up with a script, Planet of the Men, where Taylor makes, you know, bands the people together to rise against them.
Yeah.
The apes.
Which is, that seems like the obvious thing to do.
It's crazy that they rejected that one. And they went with this script.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so out there.
It's so out
there. It's crazy.
Yeah. But again, it's funny how much it starts out and it's just the same movie.
Yeah. I like that. Looking at a bird's eye view.
Well, while we were watching it, I was like, ugh.
I know.
But then now looking back, it's like, okay, it's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Because it kind of pulls the wool over your eyes.
Yeah.
We find out that Taylor like was riding around and there were these weird like animated storms happening. And I'm thinking,
I mean, you were too. Anyone who watched it, especially back then, probably was like, I didn't even know what to say.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, what are we doing here?
So confused.
And then he disappears. He like walks up to this mountain or this like rock and tries to touch it and he just disappears. And you're like, huh.
I just thought this was a Planet of Apes.
Yeah.
Oh, now you get to hear Talia's toy.
And I thought...
She's like, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. Hiding back and forth between the mic. So when that happened, I thought, okay, this is weird. Like, how can they explain this in a way that is grounded and makes sense for the world that they built? And I never would have guessed. If you gave me a bingo card, I would have not yelled bingo. Huh?
What?
So he disappears. And then we see the city of apes. So Brent is like, Nova, take me to the city of the apes. And he goes there and we find out that the apes, there's like gorillas who are in the first movie, but they're like, these are battle gorillas as they are in the first movie. but they're like presenting their case that there's stuff that's going on and we need to go to the Forbidden Zone.
And this is because of the events of the first movie, right? That has led them to this?
Well, but I kind of think, in retrospect, maybe they've gone out there, they've seen these weird storms. You know, a human came recently. Maybe they've even seen some of these mutants. And so they're like, we need to take care of them because this could be a higher life form. Isn't that what they say?
Probably.
And they will destroy us. And they'll eat all of our food. That was their big thing.
Right.
And so
take our resources.
Yeah. And I was thinking like, well, that's kind of weird that they need to like rush the Forbidden Zone. But I did not know about these mutants yet. And the more I look at this movie, the more I'm like,
it's not just the Forbidden Zone. It's what's beneath it.
Yes. Yes. So they want to invade the Forbidden Zone.
So while he's giving his spiel, everyone is like especially the gorillas. They're like, yeah, let's do this. And it seems like the orangutans are kind of like, and fear slash like, okay, I don't know though, because Dr. Yeah. Zaius is very, does not want this to happen, obviously.
Yeah.
And then the chimpanzees, they seem a little more like, they seem a little hive mindy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a stretch, but they all kind of seem like,
I think
whatever.
That's probably intentional.
Well, no, I just, yeah. But you know, they're all like, yeah, great. You guys, you're our protectors.
Yeah.
And Zira is very outwardly like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
This is bad. This means, you know, has a lot of bad implications. And Cornelius, her now husband.
Yeah.
Is like, pull it together.
Wait, is Cornelius the husband or is Cornelius the orangutan?
Dr. Zaius.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right.
And so her husband's like, you better put on, you better be happy about this. You know, like act like you're into it.
Yeah. So here's where I will say are like my two problems with the movie.
Yeah.
I think that they kind of reframe Dr. Zaius in a way that I don't think is very true to his character from the first movie.
Yeah.
He's more of a hero. And he's more like doing what's best for the tribe, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But he's like, I feel like he's painted more as you know, the leader that we all love. And we, you know, we saw that he took advantage of the entire Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I think they rewrote his character to better serve the plot rather than the character.
Yeah.
I think that there is a way you could do it.
Yeah.
With his character, where he still has the same motivations of obviously not wanting them to explore the Forbidden Zone. And like, right. In a way, you know, I always kind of like it. It's always pretty interesting in like sequels and stuff when your bad guys and good guys have to team up.
Yeah.
For a bigger cause. I think there could be a version of that.
Yeah. And I mean, on the one hand, it's like he is trying to protect the tribe again, but I feel like his motivation in the other one was like this selfish protection of knowledge and power, and in this one it doesn't seem like that's his same
it's like
motivation.
We can't handle the truth.
Yeah. And you're saying in this movie he's saying that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that kind of tracks with him then.
It does, but I do agree with what you're saying, where it seems more altruistic and not selfish.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And then the other thing I don't love is Zira and Cornelius are not punished, and he likes them and turns over the city to them, which I think makes no sense in light of
them?
The well, maybe he doesn't like them, but he's like, hey, I'm gonna go with this clan of people, you guys are
yeah,
in charge.
He like tips them off. Yeah, that's true.
And
he
he's like
shouldn't
close
trust
with
them for anything
because he didn't trust them at all in the first movie,
and especially with what they did, why would he go to them, tip them off, and like leave them in charge?
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I could see a way where you could potentially write it where it's, revealed that that character is like, I obviously know that you guys are, like, on the level.
Yeah.
And because of that, there truly is no one else who can take care of our clan better than you guys. And trust me, I don't want it to be you guys.
Yeah.
But if it's not going to be me, I think there's some heavy lifting you'd have to do there.
Well, actually, I'm thinking right now, he comes into them and he says, hey, they're about to explore the negative zone or the forbidden zone. I don't know what's out there, but I'm afraid of what's going on. And you guys are the only ones who were actually willing to do it, but you weren't thinking of fighting it. You were looking for science. So I think we need to set aside our differences and team up so that we can stop the gorillas from creating a
battle. Didn't it seem like he did know what was out there, though? In the last movie,
he knew that there was humans, the human civilization, but I don't know if he knows about these mutants.
Sure, yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
So I like the idea of him being like, let's protect the knowledge together, and then maybe we'll get through this, and then maybe I won't screw you over, and you can make up for what you did.
Yeah, you can like, I'll fund your research again, or something like that.
And here's a question. In the trailer for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the best trailer ever made, do you think when that orangutan throws the meat, do you think that that's Dr. Zaius?
Why does he throw meat? Do I think it's Dr. Zaius?
Do you think it's possible it's Dr. Zaius?
I can't. I could never answer that question.
No, but
I don't know where they're at storyline.
No. I'm saying like, just guess for fun.
I don't know. I can't.
For fun.
I don't have any information to make that guess. I do not know where they are.
Just put it on record so we could talk about it when we see it.
No.
I think it might be.
Okay, fine. You have nothing to base that on.
Why is this not a fun thing to talk about?
Because I've only seen one of them and I don't remember anything about it. And I don't know where they're at and what they've redone and gone over. I don't know.
Yeah. Talia, what do you think? Hopefully the noise gate didn't cut off her response there. Okay, well, so then there was this scene where the gorillas and Dr. Zaius are talking and they're in a spa. And that was a little odd. That was just a little odd to look at.
Oh, yeah. It looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
Also unnatural. What did they talk about?
I think they're just further discussing whether we battle, whether we don't, etc. Okay. But they're like, no, we can't battle for the battle of the or battle for the planet of the apes because we're gonna do that in the next movie.
So during all of this, Brent sees everything.
He got great ears.
Yeah, he learned everything, and then he also learned like, oh my gosh, there's a civilization of apes. I can't handle this. And then they run away, but they're tracked by a gorilla who shoots him. And then,
yeah.
So he's injured and Nova takes him to Zira and Cornelius.
Yeah.
And they bring him up to speed on stuff. They're kind of like, oh, there's another one of you.
Yeah.
They talk about Taylor. He's like, oh my gosh, you guys know Taylor. Where is he? And they're like, why is Nova here? Where did Taylor get?
Yeah.
I like all this. They dress his wound. That's when Dr. Zaius comes in and talks about his stuff. And then they're basically like, you need to go find Taylor. And then they get kidnapped like immediately after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
this is kind of funny.
Zira opens up the cage because they're set to be like target practice or something like that for the gorillas. And then they're able to escape, but then they are captured.
I think this is a little messy.
Sure.
There's a different way you can do this because we get all that exposition and learn things and they're
trying to take her sweater off.
go do this stuff. And then they immediately get kidnapped, to which Zira basically immediately sets them free. And there's not a lot like, I don't know. It just was very much like a footnote of what's happening. I don't have much more to say. And he's trying to take the sweatshirt off of her.
Got it. Oh, she looks like I just betrayed her. It's a little dicey. It could be done a little cleaner, maybe.
Yeah. But they get out.
Yeah, and the gorilla training sequence is insane. There's a horse that flips over a man.
Never seen that before.
I hope the horse is okay. And I'm sure it's still living today.
You're sure it's still living today?
That was Secretariat. Who is famously still alive, but its head is in a jar with Walt Disney.
Are you serious?
No, not at all.
with Walt Disney? I just thought specifically they did the cryogenic with a horse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, that's not too unbelievable that something like that would or has happened. Okay, so all that happens and you're like, okay, this is pretty run of the mill. Thank you, Talia. Love you. But then they're hiding from the gorillas who are chasing them.
She put the whole head in her mouth.
She's got a little dog toy. Like, it is a dog.
Dog squeaky toys are baby toys.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This is going to be a bit of a scatter episode, but...
You're loving it.
You are loving it, folks. So, they find this cave, and they're running away from the gorillas, and they go down. And there is a very cool set.
Of a subway station. Of a subway station. In Queens,
yeah.
I think.
Queensboro. Yeah, Queensboro.
Cool.
Queensboro Plaza, I'm sorry.
And this is where he's like, this is my home.
I wrote cool set alert. And so he has the moment of, like, the New York skyscraper. Or, I'm sorry, Lady
Statue,
Liberty.
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, where he's
Lady
like...
Liberty.
Isn't that what...
Oh, no one says that, though.
I say it.
Oh, okay.
And so do the French.
Okay.
And they made that thing. So that he has that moment where he's like, oh my gosh, I'm on planet Earth. And I think, you know, you're like, okay, you know, this certainly doesn't have
We've
the impact
seen
of the
this
first
before.
Movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then the movie's gonna, just like a glass onion, we're gonna peel back the layers. Because
we're gonna shatter back those layers.
So then the set is cool, all of that. He starts wandering around. And it's great. I think I could do the rest of this without even looking at my notes because it was so...
He doesn't immediately start wandering around. We get back to the apes for some stuff.
Okay, I could do everything underground without the notes because it was so, like, visceral and the sets were so cool and I just kind of was like, could not... I felt so invested in the mystery. It's like they revealed the answer, but then now there's another mystery and I feel like they kind of did it excellently. Yeah,
let's
just cover
the apes part to catch it up to this.
Okay.
And then we can get into that. I think if I remember right, the apes are like, okay, we're going to go carry out and just figure out the Forbidden Zone stuff.
And there's protesters.
There's protesters, which are chimpanzees.
Yeah.
Interesting. They bypass them.
It's obviously a smaller tribe and it's a lower budgeted movie, but it is just funny that the protesters are like 20 chimpanzees only.
Yeah.
Because like anytime you see protesters in a movie or something, it's like hundreds or even in real life, it's like hundreds.
Small, but mighty.
Yeah.
So yeah, they go out and they're starting their Forbidden Zone stuff. Basically that's it. And then eventually they happen upon
They'll come into the cave.
Well, they
kind of
discover
movie,
Taylor
really.
Or potentially, and that's why Taylor travels further for deeper into the subway. I think also because they hear that noise.
Oh, you're talking about our heroes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the gorillas.
I think I said Taylor, but I mean Brent.
Yeah. So they're hearing this noise and he's going around and he keeps tasting the water, which I'm like, dude, that's a bad idea. Don't just drink random water.
And he tastes it one time and he starts, it's gross to him. And then a fountain starts going and he drinks that. And he's like, this water's good. And then Nova starts drinking it and he's starting to drown her.
He has like a vision that's telling him to kill her, basically. Yeah. And he's trying to. And then he comes to this
ladder.
But
he overcomes it and he doesn't do it.
And we're hearing this humming sound. And he touches it. And every time he touches it, the humming stops.
He touches what?
This ladder.
Oh.
And you and I are like, this is cool.
Yeah.
And then he surmises.
We're like on the edge of our seats. Is it through this he sees we are taken through other sets throughout New York? I know you're talking about the sets, but other locations, like the New York Stock Exchange.
Yep.
The rest.
The New York Stock Exchange and the rest. And it was fun because we got to say, been there, even though it doesn't make sense. Anyway, so the latter thing actually comes before he attempts to drown her. I'm looking at my notes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, guys. But he's touching this ladder, and then he surmises, okay, they either want us to come and we're going the right direction, or we're being warned to stay away.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we get to St. Patrick's Cathedral. The doors open up, and I think I was frankly kind of shocked. There's a man standing there.
I was shocked. Are you kidding
and
me?
And he's speaking English.
I kind of hope that if you're listening to this and you've never seen these movies, that you watched this before listening to it.
Yeah,
because it was so fun to witness having known nothing.
Yeah. And this is not a well-revered movie. And I have to say, again, I'm going to keep saying it. I feel like I'm talking about Maestro at this point. I'm like, this movie kind of rocks.
They took risks.
Yeah.
And they did it with a budget that was slashed.
Yeah. I think this movie's cool.
I like this movie. But it's pretty great.
Well, and as you and I discuss a lot, especially when you're talking about big, long series, sure, a lot of movies have a lot of issues. But for me, if you can do some interesting stuff, I am willing to overlook some issues.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what we got here. And we're at the cathedral.
Agrees.
This guy's like praying. And Brent is just
so confused.
The bomb is there at that part.
I think so.
Point. And so then he goes into this room and there are all these weird looking people. As in they're like wearing weird garb.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
other people.
A character named Fat Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he is standing there and they're doing these, they're looking at him and then there's like synth sounds that are like.
And they'll like close their eyes and focus because they're telepathically.
Is it Goofy? Absolutely.
Yeah, they're telepathically talking to him.
Yeah.
It's cool that they don't... Well, I mean, I don't know. Some of it is too silly, but also whatever. When they do it, they're talking telepathically. We don't know what they're saying. We're relying on Brent to tell us what's happening. And then they're also telepathically hurting him, harming him.
Yeah.
Eventually, one guy speaks. and is explaining things.
Yeah.
And he is explaining that we are, so these people are aware of the apes, and they are also aware that they are not physically matched against them. So they do, their solution to that is mind stuff.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know how, like in series, a lot of times there's like that entry that is like widely regarded as the worst. And then usually if they make a lot of movies, they'll reference it and people kind of love that they referenced it. For example, Halloween 3 is kind of always regarded as the worst. People are weirdly trying to reclaim that movie, even though it sucks ass.
It's so boring.
But like the beginning of the newest Halloween movie had like the font from Halloween 3. And it was like, oh, interesting. And I think people like that. They didn't like Halloween Ends. Halloween Ends rocks. Different conversation. Team Corey. Maybe we should cover that series someday. We should.
Probably.
Because they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of that to say, I'm just saying right now, if this mutant thing is not in any of the other movies, I will be that nerdy, dumb fan that if in one of these newer Planet of the Apes movies, if they include mutants, I will be like, the mutants, let's go! I'll be more excited than the mutants getting introduced into the MCU. I'll be like, let's go, the muties are in Planet of the Apes. Apparently my new favorite series, okay?
Yeah, 2 movies in.
I know, I got high hopes because Case said this was the worst one tied with Tim Burton's. So,
and we've seen the Tim Burton one.
Which is, yikes, McGikes. But yes, yeah, so these characters are the keepers of the divine bomb. Cool. Can I get an amen from that? Mm-hmm. The keepers of the divine bomb. And they're talking to him, and they keep this bomb. They worship this bomb.
They have Taylor.
They have Taylor. And, you know, as much as, like, this is definitely, like, you can tell Charlton Heston doesn't want to be in this movie, I actually think the way they wrote him out of the movie and then include him at the end...
works for me.
It works for me.
And this guy's good. This Franciscus guy.
This Brett boy.
Yeah.
So, while this is happening, you have the gorillas getting to that zone and they see their lawgiver as a statue. And the statue starts bleeding.
And there's fire.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So the mutants are projecting this.
Yeah, and they've explained that they can project and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, this makes sense. This tracks for this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Zaius goes up, and then the statue collapses on him, and he's like, it was all just an illusion. And then they go underground.
Yes. Okay. And then Brent and Nova are sitting on a service, like a church service.
Yeah.
Where they're singing their hymns.
Yeah, sorry.
Reveal the bomb. Pray to the bomb. I love the bomb. I married the bomb.
It sounds like you're quoting something, but I'm not sure if you are.
I don't know. Well, thinking of Dr. Strangelove, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Two great bomb movies.
But it's crazy enough. It's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and I'm pun like, intended, bananas.
This is.
then during the service.
This is cool. It's weird.
One
whatever.
Of the dudes removes his face
and says, I reveal my innermost being to my God,
and he's
or something
gross,
along those lines.
Veiny dude. And then you think, oh my gosh, they're all like this. And
they're
then I
all
think,
like this.
Why are they wearing faces? They're the only ones they see. Why do they need to hide themselves?
Well,
and I don't feel like they really answered that.
You know what?
Other than makeup.
They didn't. But here's what I will say. It is a religious practice.
Okay.
Where it is like, we only reveal our true mutant faces when we are in the presence of our God, the bomb.
Great for me.
How cool is that?
That's all I need. No more questions, Your Honor.
The more I keep thinking about this bomb religion thing, the more I'm like, this is like the coolest thing in the world. And I love these mutant boys and girls.
Coolest thing in the world.
It's so cool. And what I think is interesting, you know, the previous movie has this whole science versus religion, and that is like the social commentary. And I think what this movie posits as its social commentary, what I notice is that humanity demands religion. And humanity cannot live religionless, is what this movie says to me.
Now, we're homo sapiens, right?
Yeah.
Cannot live without it. Oh, well, no, because the apes even have religion.
Yeah. Because I think you get, it's almost like, I mean, you bring up Dr. Strangelove, and I think it's actually kind of an apropos thing to bring up, because it is kind of like such a ridiculous idea that there's a bomb that destroyed the world, and people say, like, that is our God. And so I think this movie, you could almost look at this satirically as, like, man will worship anything because he has, like, he needs to worship.
Hmm.
And it could be as stupid as a bomb, and he will still worship it because he can never be truly free.
Self-sufficient.
Self-sufficient. I'm religious, so I can't really say free without, you know, that contradicting my
Your
whole
background.
Belief system.
Yeah.
But I think in the world of the movie, that is like the
that's
the,
interesting.
The commentary that I get.
Yeah.
But I do love, you know, when we read the whole thing about the mutants, I do love this idea that they know that this thing destroyed the Earth, but they also know that it created their mutants and their abilities in some way because of the nuclear fallout. So they do view it as a god because in a way it is their creator.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Cool.
That's interesting.
I mean, if put these guys in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I'm telling you, let's do this.
So then Brent is made prisoner. That's when he meets up with Taylor. And then one of the telepath dudes makes them fight each other to the death.
Uh-huh.
They're interrupted. Well, this fight scene kind of goes on for a while. But then they're interrupted by the apes storming in.
Right.
And a war begins.
Yeah.
So through all of this, our heroes they kill the telepath dude, and then they get out of their cell.
What's going on?
She's got something in her nose.
Oh, okay. We're not cutting it.
But yeah, they get out of the cell, and then they're like, "What do we do? We got to get out of here." Yada yada yada. Nova gets shot and killed,
uh-huh.
And I was like, "Whoa, okay,
I know
we're doing that."
And then like the next shot, they kill Brent.
Well, not the next shot.
I mean, so close together
that
I was like,
"They're in the church.
What?
They go to the church. Our mutants, you know, they're being attacked on."
Uh-huh.
The guy's like, "Gotta release the bomb."
Yeah.
So brings the bomb up, and then the apes are like, "What is that?"
Yeah.
Well, they know what they know.
I can't
recall if they do know
if they knew.
But our dudes are like,
"Stop!
Don't deploy the bomb," because they do know that this bomb would destroy the world.
Yeah. Because
so,
Heston, you know, is like. The Alpha Omega Bomb, the source of all knowledge.
Yeah.
You know.
That's
gotta,
the one word you
gotta
can
whip
do.
Out my knowledge.
So, yeah, they're like, "Okay, we gotta stop this." But then they decide not to, right? Well, whatever. Brent is doing, you know, they break apart. That's when Brent gets killed. Surprising that they killed him.
I think you and I both actually said, "What?"
Yeah.
Like, a surprise.
And then Charlton is shot. But he crawls
like,
to the control board and pushes the button that deploy, and then the screen goes white.
Now, okay, but before that, my understanding was he's trying to reach, and I thought he was trying to stop it.
I thought he was too,
but then he dies, and
is it an accident?
It could probably be read either way. I read it as an accident.
I guess for me, I read it as this is the only way to stop it. All the fighting.
Hey, if you have an opinion on it, discuss it with us on our Facebook page, which is linked in this episode.
Hmm. It's been a day or two since we've watched it, too, so
yeah.
I can't exactly remember how I felt. But it was shocking.
It was shocking. And then it goes white, and we have this narration of a random person we have not heard. In one of the countless billions of galaxies in the universe lies a medium-sized star, and one of its satellites, a green and insignificant planet, is now dead.
What the F, dude?
Credits roll.
Yeah. And
credits
it's like,
roll.
I'm watching this movie and I got chills from this for some reason.
This movie rocks. What other movie ends with the entire world blowing up and that's it?
Usually we stop it.
But yeah, I loved this movie. I think it's awesome.
It was cool.
And it's at the worst. It's a movie that's worth watching just to see the bananas action of it. And at best, it's kind of a great movie.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to continue down this journey. I do want to say, you got to go to patreon.com/MikeahMacaw, and you got to sign up and listen to our episode of Trainspotting with Case Aiken, which rocked, for as little as $3. And then there's also a lot of music stuff coming out this soon-ish.
What month are we in?
We're in March, I'm pretty sure, but I'll double check that. And maybe you can mention something while I look
that
up.
I have an art show opening May 24th, I think. I can't remember if I talked about it, but it got pushed a week. So May 24th at Central Art Gallery.
Okay.
I'll be showing my art with Ren Panter. And then we're doing some, if you're local, we'll be at Medford Comic-Con or Rogue Comic-Con. I think it's Rogue Comic-Con. And then we'll also be doing another artisan market a week after that in Central Point, Made in Southern Oregon. I think that's what it's called.
Okay, cool.
May 4th and 11th, and then come to our gallery on the 24th.
Yes, do all of that. And
say something, Talia.
Last month it was, or last week was my show. So there'll be some updates on that because we are planning on releasing a concert film and a concert album. So from the show. Anyway, Talia, finish us off. We got in and we got out. We were concise. Next week it is, let's see. Next week is
Above.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Oh.
All right, Talia, say something for us.
Goo goo gaga. Oh, I cut her off.
Wait.
Say something. Yeah. Come on. You gotta do it. Try this mic. Talia, try it.
Well, it didn't happen, folks. And you heard a lot of dead air.
You're gonna keep that in?
I think so. Adios.